This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode 140. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I'm glad to be back with you. I'm Jim Harmer, and today you are joined by thousands and thousands and thousands of photographers from all around the world. The Improved Photography Podcast is our weekly roundtable where we get all the different hosts of the podcast, whoever's available, and we just talk photography and get all the tips that we can from any kind of different genre of photography. Beginning photographers, more experienced photographers, everybody's welcome. We don't discriminate here. So to talk about today's topics, we have Brian McGuckin from the Thoughts on Photography podcast, Jeff Harmon from Photo Taco, Darren Meller, and Nick Page from Portrait Session as well. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Well, lots to talk about this week. Our first question comes in from Mason Gordon. He asks, has anybody used Lightroom Mobile and actually liked it? I totally feel with you, Mason. I would like to use it for long car rides because I don't have a working laptop. So is it even effective or even worth it? So my answer would be, no, it's completely useless. I hate Lightroom Mobile, but Jeff Harmon, I know you use it. So give us at least some hope for Lightroom Mobile. What do we use this thing for?
So I think the only thing that I think it's helpful over other apps is for culling your photos. So in selecting the ones that are best from a shoot, if you unload your SD card into your Lightroom library and you put it into a collection so that you can sync it to Lightroom Mobile, then on the go, you could go, like if you're sitting in the car, like Mason was saying, you could go through and select the best of the photos, do your culling, do the stars, do the coloring, whatever kind of rating system that you've got going, and do it. Other than that, the editing features are pretty limited compared to what you can do in Lightroom. It's not a whole lot. Just
you can, the editor on Instagram is about 15 times more powerful than the Lightroom app. It's awful. Mm-hmm. And the interface is so clunky. Yeah. It's not intuitive at all. Not a fan.
Right. No, I'm not either. I've used it for that purpose, but for editing, no.
So right before my wedding trip, I had just shot a wedding and I purposely put everything into a smart collection and synced it with Lightroom Mobile so I could, you know, from my tablet, sit there in the airport and go through my photos and at least do my star ratings. I could not find a Wi-Fi service good enough to actually, you know, sync all of my photos to my tablet. I thought that I had done it at home before I even left. I got there and like, I don't know, 1/3 of my 1500 photos or whatever, it actually synced. So I wasn't even able to make my selections. Mm-hmm. And I've tried it multiple times and it's just hard to find a good solid use for. I feel like it definitely needs to improve somehow.
Yeah.
I'm definitely there. I am actually really surprised that Adobe put out Lightroom Mobile with this interface. I don't know anybody who's excited by Lightroom Mobile. And guess what? Mobile's kind of a big deal. It's not exactly going away. It's time for a huge, major overhaul of the interface. It just doesn't make any sense.
So what mobile app do you like?
Honestly, I love the way that the Instagram app works. You know, I rarely use any of the filters, but the tools it has for editing the photo are actually pretty darn cool on Instagram. By the way, you can follow me at Jim Harmer. but the way that the Instagram one works, I'm really a big fan of. Do you guys like the way that interface works?
The one I like better is Snapseed. I have more control over how the edits go. So, but I only use it when I take the shot on my iPhone. I'm not syncing my raw files and trying to edit them on the mobile device. So if I take the shot on the iPhone, I really like the individual controls in Snapseed.
I'm so old school. Like, I don't know why anybody would want to edit on their phone. I mean, really? Come on. Like, the only thing I ever take a picture of with my phone is my camera. Because really, like, the back of my camera is the most photographed thing by my phone. That and like the license plate on my car when I stay at a hotel. Everything else I do with a good camera because cell phones suck. Just throwing that out there.
What phone do you have though? You probably have a sucky phone.
Well, let's not.
Right? What kind do you have?
Okay, so
that's right. You are the only one on this podcast that uses Android.
Yes, that's true. And not only an Android, but it's like a really old, cracked, broken Android. But that's beside the point. That's not what we're talking about. Right.
You don't have to like mobile. You don't have to like mobile photography. It took me a long time to catch on to it, but it's just kind of fun. I don't know. All right, listener James Darby asks, does anybody have any advice for someone wanting to start getting a little extra cash with stock photography? So stock photography, for those of you who are uninitiated, is where you take one of your photos, you upload it to a website who sells it for very low cost, usually very low cost, typically in the $3 to $10 range for a photo. People can use it on websites. Heck, you could put it on a billboard with a little bit of a different license. Companies can use it for a pamphlet or whatever it is. That's stock photography. So any photographer can do this. You go to istockphoto.com or Fotolia or Pond5 or whoever you want to upload to. And then when they sell the photo, you get a small cut of the sale. So that's what stock photography is. I've done a little bit of stock photography, mostly just for the experience. Has anybody else? I haven't heard any of you guys talking stock. Have any of you done it?
Not really.
No.
Okay.
The closest I've done is Fine Art America. And that's just randomly I'll get something in the mail, a check, and it's usually very small.
Okay. So I want everybody to do it this week. Like seriously, I want all of you guys to do it and report it in your 5-minute segment this week. So when you go to istockphoto.com is the biggest one by far. You can sign up to be a contributor in the footer. Anybody can do it. It's real easy. You just put in your information, give them where to send a check for your money, etc. And then they make you pass a test. They have 5 or 10 pages you have to read, and they'll tell you about photography technique and how to post process your photo for stock. And they have the most incredibly strict requirements on what they're going to accept. I mean, it has to be perfect image quality for them to accept it. The photo can be, frankly, just fair, not necessarily the most creative photo, but it has to have perfect image quality. So you'll do your test, and once you pass the written test, which is really easy, I mean, give yourself an hour and it's going to be just fine. Then you can submit your photos. You'll submit your first batches, usually I think 3 or 5, and they'll review those photos and they'll either accept you as a stock photographer or reject it and say, we need new photos. And you can keep submitting as many times as you want until you're accepted as an iStock photographer. Every photographer should do this. In fact, it significantly changed everything I do in photography when I started shooting stock, because it made my strictness on how strict I am with image quality go way, way, way up. Now, is it worth it to earn a little extra money there? Yeah, I would give it maybe 80 cents to a dollar per image per month, just as a general rule. Some sell better, some sell worse. It's going to be pizza money if you only have 5 or 10 photos up there. But hey, you got 100, 1,000 photos on there and you could start earning some serious cash every month. So it takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. And that this is an industry that really is kind of crashing down, getting worse by the day. But can you still make money? Yes. In fact, I just checked my iStock photo and sure, it's about between 80 cents and a dollar per image per month. I've had several photos up there for 5 years and that seems to stay constant. I only have, 15 photos on there is all. I mean, one of these days I need to just pick a whole day and just upload to iStock because it's money that just comes in. All right. In our main segment, we want to talk about Wedding Photogate. This has been crazy in the news. Just about every photo blog has been picking this up. Even some of the mainstream media have been talking about this. And Darren, why don't you kind of give us the lay of the land on this one? Tell us about the story. And then judging from our comments before we recorded, I think we're all in consensus here. Even me and Nick Page agreed.
Oh, wow.
And that's saying
that's
something.
A great precursor. All right. Well, essentially, there was this photographer named Carly Fuller and a DJ named Ken Rokon, and they battled it out over who was actually hired to shoot the wedding. And we all know that the wedding photographer, Carly Fuller, was the one who shot the wedding, but she was flawed in thinking that DJ Ken could not shoot the wedding at all. So she was very perturbed when he decided to bring his professional camera gear. There's photos of him in the background, kind of in the bokeh, shooting a 70 to 200 Canon L lens and using professional equipment. And she even asked him to stop shooting, and he continued to shoot. And she said that she he photobombed her photos, got in the way, and then actually gave the clients, I guess, 24 plus images is what it's showing here in the article, as a gift. And she thinks that that was exclusively wrong of him to do that, unprofessional. And it just turned into a huge Facebook battle where all these photographers were behind Carly Fuller, and the DJ was trying to be professional, saying, hey, I have the right to photograph this, you know, and I have the right to photograph love. So it's just a back and forth between these two over whose job was being stepped upon and who was, you know, stepping outside of their professional bounds. And like I said, it caused an uproar with the photography community. So what's your stance on it, guys? I mean,
So just to recap real quick though. Mm-hmm. So the problem is the photographer has a contract with the client. The photographer says that the contract says that they're going to be the exclusive photographer. And so they're saying the client agreed that nobody else is going to be taking the pictures. So the photographer cares because they're going to be selling these photos to the client for prints and doesn't want other people taking pictures there so the couple wouldn't need then to buy their photos. So that's the argument there. Sorry, go ahead.
No worries. I mean, the agreement actually read that the agreement contains the entire understanding between Carly Fuller Photography and the client. It supersedes all prior and simultaneously agreements between the parties. It is understood that Carly Fuller Photography is the exclusive official photographer retained to perform the photographic services requested in this contract. And that is her main argument against the DJ even having the ability to shoot photos at the wedding at all.
So, Nick, you're a wedding photographer. What do you think about this?
I think that this wedding photographer is super insecure about their own abilities. That's what I think. Like, if you go around trying to sue everybody that takes a photo at a wedding, you are going to be spending a whole lot of time in court. What if grandma shows up with a 5D Mark III and a 70 to 200, takes some photos, and then gives it to the bride and groom? Are they going to sue grandma? If they're that worried about other photographers, maybe they should do a better job at their job and do the best photos at the wedding. Because you, as a photographer, you get all the time with the bride and groom, and it's you that get to take them apart and set up your lighting. It's not like the DJ is bringing in their flash setup and taking them off for an hour or two to do portraits. Like that's stuff that only the wedding photographer gets to do. And that should be more than enough to set them apart from the DJ taking photos from his DJ booth. If you're not setting yourself apart from the DJ, then maybe the problem lies with your abilities and not with the DJ with a decent camera. That's what I got to say.
I agree completely.
Go get him.
Oh, snap. Two snaps in a circle. That's what I'm talking about. Can I get an amen?
Circle.
The thing is, amen. Though, is how many people supported the wedding photographer?
The vast majority did, out on those media.
Yeah. Crazy. There was all this support for him. And I just thought the same thing.
I think that those are other photographers that are also insecure with their own abilities.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Crazy. I'm sorry. If this is what professional photography is about, I'm going to pay you to go shoot, and then I'm going to pay you to get what I shot. I'm going to be crimped down on letting you ever use those photos, and nobody else is going to take any other pictures. That's crazy. I'm sorry, but wedding photography is going to disappear if we treat our clients so poorly. Right. I mean, just be nice. Mm-hmm. They're paying you money because they think you're going to do a good job for them. If they thought the DJ was going to do good enough, they wouldn't have hired you. So yeah. Your position is secure. You got your money. Now just let everybody enjoy the wedding day. And also, I've got to add, see, I am an attorney. And so when I read this kind of crap of a contract, I've got to speak up. So Carly Fuller Photography points back to the contract and says, you said here that nobody else is allowed to take photos at the wedding. I'm sorry, Carly Fuller Photography, you're wrong. What the contract actually says is, quote, it is understood Carly Fuller Photography is the exclusive official photographer retained to perform the photographic services requested on this contract. Now, all that says is the only person in this contract who you're contracting with as the official photographer is Carly Fuller Photography. Did that sentence say no one else is allowed to take professional pictures? That's not what it said. Mm-hmm. And you can tell this sentence is not written by an attorney, at least not an attorney worth half his salt, because this is just extremely poorly worded. And I can tell by the place that it's in the contract, when it's already in the portion of the contract where it's just saying there's the entire agreement and stuff. She just chucked this in as the last sentence of the contract. I mean, this is just so poorly worded that this contract does not even forbid what was done. And even if the contract did forbid it, it's crazy that you would make an issue out of this. I mean, it's just so foolish to treat a paying customer this poorly.
It right. seems to me like the reason that she got so upset on this particular one was because she got beat.
Right, exactly.
The DJ did a better job capturing the wedding from his one position at the table than she did in photographing the event.
What does that say about you as a photographer? If the guy, the DJ, can like take a quick break from his job that he's doing there and take 23 photos that are better than what you are delivering. Because, that's really the only time that a photographer starts to get bent out of shape is when they feel like they got showed up. And I think that that's what happened here.
Yeah, and one thing that I took Brian on as a mentor without his permission, so sorry about that, Brian. But he actually talked some sense into me in Chicago, and he talked to me about how he charges what he needs for a wedding. And one argument that came across social media when a fellow photographer from Photo Focus posted about this, saying he was disgusted with, you know, both the DJ and the photographer, was that everyone kept saying, well, what about upselling? I mean, upselling the wedding photos is really where they make their money. Well, I'm going back to what Brian taught me. I need to charge what I need to make off the wedding, and I'm not going to hold someone's images hostage. I'm using pass, and I'm allowing them to print photos as they want to. And as long as I know they're going through a reputable print lab, I could care less who prints their photos and how many photos they get out of the deal, because I'm charging what I need to make off the wedding. So I think that's a huge side of things as well to explore.
Yeah, I think ultimately if they're hiring you to do your job, as long as you've done your job, then that's your job. You know, if somebody else does something else, that's up to them. You know, as a wedding photographer, if you set your standards ahead of time, and you know, okay, this is what I need financially for this job, you know, then that should be enough. It's their wedding. It's not your wedding as a photographer. It's theirs. And you do the job that they ask you to do. And, you know, if somebody else goes above and beyond and does what they want to, then, you know, that's their business.
All right. It looks like we're in agreement. The internet got this one just so wrong. So I'm glad that we could correct the record here. But I guess lesson learned is you need to communicate with the couple before the wedding. And part of that communication is the contract, which was extremely poorly written here. I mean, so badly written, it's not even funny. But also, if you're going to make a big stink out of this, do not do it during a wedding. Get this kind of stuff cleared up with the other vendors before the wedding if you're going to be a jerk about this kind of thing. Okay, enough said. Well, before we go on, we wanted to do our round robins and talk about the most popular camera on earth, being the iPhone 6S, or at least it will be shortly if it follows in the success of other iPhones before it. But before we do that, we want to talk about Animoto. Animoto is a awesome company. If you've ever had the horrible, embarrassing experience of being in front of a group and you're in charge of the photo slideshow because everybody knows you're the photographer and you totally bomb it. The slideshow starts in the middle and the music isn't lined up, and at the end the music keeps playing after a little bit. I've had that experience actually a couple times before I discovered Animoto. Animoto makes gorgeous, professional, super simple slideshows of your photography. upload your photos, including video clips as well, and you can drag and drop them in the builder. You can put on professional music that you have the rights to use in the slideshows you make, and you get video, which is going crazy on both Facebook and YouTube right now. It's a great way to get a little motion out of your photography. In fact, I heard a really cool tip this week of somebody who's using Animoto. So Facebook, just dramatically shows videos much, much, much more than photos. If you put a video on there, it's going to get a lot of views right now on Facebook. And so the tip that he was doing is, instead of just posting a photo of a wedding, which will go to half of the wedding couple's friends or less, he was just making a short, like 10-second slideshow on Animoto, just a sneak peek of the wedding, just with, you know, 10 photos real quick. And he said it was just giving huge, huge numbers of views by switching to that. So if you're a professional wedding photographer and you want to get your photography seen by all of the attendees of the wedding, then that's a pretty cool hack. And Animoto is a great way to make those quick slideshows as well. And you can visit animoto.com/improve and use promo code improve to get 15% off an annual pro subscription, whether you're going to make quick slideshows for marketing or a full-length professional slideshow. Animoto is the resource for you.
It works great for DJs as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably would.
So if you're a DJ and you took photos at a wedding, great option for you. All right. Well, in our round robin segment, we're each going to take 5 minutes and talk about something that is interesting to us in the photography world this week. Some tips that we have learned. And we're going to start off by tossing it to Jeff Harmon with the topic that we could not skip, which was the Apple event today.
Yep. So throw it over to the PC guy to talk about the Apple.
Yeah, that's right. We'll throw it over to the nerd to talk about the Apple.
Oh, that's a fun. Better way. Okay. Now, Apple talked like 10 minutes about this stuff, so I'm going to try to really go through it fast. There's not much to, besides specs, that's all I'm going to be able to say right now, but we'll get some hands on. I'm going to order one and I'll be comparing it between the existing iPhone 6S or 6 Plus and the new iPhone 6S. I'm going to get that for the wife and we'll do some comparisons. But here's the specs. Here's the rundown kind of on the event today. We don't have enough time to really talk in depth about it. We'll do more of that as we get hands on. But here we go. Okay, so iPad Pro was announced. It's 78% more screen space at 12.9 inches than any iPad model in the past. They tout 70% faster CPU and 90% faster graphics. So they worked a lot, really hard on that. And then, you know, they're really trying to target this Pro device as a desktop replacement, as something you can use instead of a MacBook or an iMac or a PC. So they have some new accessories to go with it. One's called the Apple Pencil, and it's $100. and then the keyboard accessory that has this fancy new connection, magnetic connection to connect with it. And so it provides power and it doesn't need Bluetooth to talk. So it's better on the battery of the iPad. And that's like $160. So all in, if you got like the lowest priced model plus those accessories, you're over $1,000 to get this, to get this new iPad. Ooh. Yeah.
Wow.
They didn't talk a lot about any other stuff with it. There was so much to talk about with the accessories and their fancy videos to to re-say the same things again. So, you know, not a lot else to say about it right now at this point, but it is, they did have both Microsoft and Adobe come and present in the keynote or in the announcement. Microsoft presented their Office suite and how you can use the Pencil to like write on PowerPoint presentations or Word documents, editing things like you're redlining something. And Adobe presented using three different apps. I think two of them are brand new that they're releasing in late October that so that they can use the multitasking capabilities in iOS 9 and be able to do layout was the example that they showed. And even it had a face that they changed the model who looked very stern to her looking like she was smiling. As one of the examples. So anyway, really, I'm not sure how it's going to go. Maybe Adobe's going to get their act together. We talked about mobile and the woes that we have with Lightroom Mobile. We don't find it all that useful right now. Maybe with this, they're going to go a lot more on that and it'll get better. But you might have to have the latest version for it to really be any good. So anyway, that's the new iPad Pro. Then they had the iPhone 6S and the 6S Plus. These names are getting a little bit worse as we get, go on and on. Again, they claim 70% faster CPU, 90% faster graphics.
It's funny. If you take those percentages and you actually got what they advertise on each one, like for the last five phones, we should be like going at light speed right now.
Yeah, it's
truly 70% faster every time. That's funny.
Yeah.
Marketing.
It says up to always. So they have an out because it's up to. And they're like, oh, yeah, not for that load. Not for that task. That's not where we're getting faster. But they did, in my opinion, just on specs. So, again, we'll have to get hands on to see. I think they made a significant leap forward on the camera stuff on this iPhone. So we went from 8 megapixel in the iPhone 6 to 12 megapixel in the 6S. That's a pretty big jump. And they made a big deal about saying they didn't want to do, they could have made this increase a while ago, but they didn't want to do it if they were going to sacrifice any image quality. When you increase the density of the megapixels in the sensor, and the sensor is the same size, then your noise handling and your image detail, that all can suffer a lot. So they've been working really hard for years now, according to Apple, that to make it so that they could increase the megapixels, increase the density in that same sized sensor, and still have really good image quality. In particular, something that they're calling deep trench isolation. What a nerdy term, huh?
The marketing group was back.
They had this really complicated explanation of it. I'm not going to go through it. But anyway, it's supposed to make it so that they achieve that. They don't have a lot of noise, and that's more accurate in the colors, even though they increased the megapixels. There's optical image stabilization, but only in the 6S Plus again. So the 6S doesn't get that. The panos went from 43 megapixels to now it can do 63 megapixels. And now we have 4K video at 30 frames a second. While you're taking
that's
the video.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah. That's although
of course the
size.
It's not going to be near the quality of 4K. Yeah.
Right. And hey, and the phone, okay. If you have a 64 gig phone, you get like 4 minutes of video and you're filling
yeah,
up,
that's
you know?
About right.
So yeah, how good is that going to be? And then the front facing camera goes up from 1.2 megapixels to 5. They had a
no 1080p video on the front facing camera.
Still 720p. Yep, still 720p.
I would use that a lot when I'm making tutorials. Yep. I want to have 1080p videos, and so often I'm selfie sticking it or whatever. I have my cell phone on a tripod. In fact, a lot of the tutorials you watch on our YouTube channel and some of our paid product are shot on the iPhone, and you really never notice it. It does great quality stuff. Anyway, so I want to use the front facing camera so that I can see myself and make sure I'm in the frame. But it's only 720p. And so I was hoping to see that changed on this one. I know it's a small thing and it's only going to affect a small portion of the people that are doing that. But for me, that's a big one. I really wish we would have seen that go up to 1080p.
And then they tried to solve the flash problem too, because that's front facing. There's also no flash. You can't illuminate anything from the phone. So they did something. I don't know how this is going to work. I want to try it. They're calling it Retina Flash. The marketing team really had to stretch for this one too. And so when you take the picture and you want it to flash, the screen is going to go three times brighter, really quick, and then go back to normal.
They've been doing that since the MacBook Pro first came out with Photo Booth.
Yeah.
Oh, so there you go.
See how that is. And then in the last feature that they touted, and they spent forever on this, something they're calling Live Photos. And the concept seems really cool, but it's only going to work with the Apple products. So if you go and put this out on Facebook and someone's using a PC or an Android phone or whatever other non-Apple thing there might be, they're not even, I don't know what they're going to see. I don't know if they'll even see a still. The idea is you take a photo just like normal. When you have it on live mode, it actually takes frames 1.5 seconds on either side of when you hit the button to take the shot. So then they're using some proprietary new technology to make it so that it's not video, but it's storing the changes that are being made in those frames for 1.5 seconds before and after. And then when you do something special on the phone, it's this new force touch thing, or they call it 3D touch. The video move, or the still picture starts moving, and you can see 1.5, or I guess it's a total of 3 seconds about the time that you took the video to see motion there.
It's this magical thing so from it's the like future the called newspapers a gift.
And Harry Potter.
Yeah, it is. It does sound a lot like a GIF. Yeah, that's true. So I don't know how that's going to go. That seems to me like it's going to be pretty gimmicky, and it could be cool if it was actually like a standard where it could be done the same way everywhere. That might be really fun. But when it's going to be unique to Apple, that seems like it's limiting enough that it's not going to be terribly useful.
Now, are the live photos, is this a feature of iOS 9 that even the older phones are going to get, or is this going to be iPhone 6S thing?
They said you'll be able to see the live photos on El Capitan for OS 10 and on iPhones and iPads, but you won't be able to take them anywhere but the iPhone 6S.
See, that stinks because there's no way that's a hardware thing that they have to have the hardware to be able to do this. I really doubt it. They're just not enabling it. That kind of stinks. Well, thanks, Jeff, for giving us the rundown of the Apple announcement. You know, I'm kind of on the fence of this one. I'm usually the one to run out and get the new phone. This doesn't look like a real big change in the camera to me. I mean, 4 megapixels and 4K video is the real thing.
Yeah, but you'll get the pink one, Jim.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That is new.
It could be rose gold.
There's lots of other new stuff, too. I just mentioned the photography-related things.
Well, that's all I care about.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff. All right, Darren, what do you got?
Well, I was fortunate enough to go out to New York City and test two brand new lenses, which you can read about on the Improved Photography website. And those are the 35mm and 45mm f1.8 Tamron lenses. And they have image stabilization in them, which is pretty cool for a prime lens. And I've been testing them. They actually let me borrow the lenses and take them home with me, which I think was really brave of them to do that. No, I promise I'll return them back, Tamron. But they're insanely sharp from what I've tested them. I've shot everything from models to bugs in my backyard to pictures of ring shots at a wedding. And it's incredibly sharp. I mean, I really have not found a lens in my experience that's this sharp for this much of a price point. I mean, it's $599 for each of these lenses, and I'm going to actually test it against the Sigma Art lens. I think Nick's actually testing one of those right now. Is that right, Nick?
I have one of the art lenses, but not the 35 prime. I've got the 24 to 35 f2, but I'll talk about that later.
Right on. Well, I want to pair it up with a Sigma Art lens. I'm actually going to my camera store tomorrow and let them borrow the 45 and then test it against the Sigma Art lens, see if they can run me a deal on that, because they called me as soon as the new Tamron 15 to 30 was released, and I was one of the first people in the country to have one of those. So I think that we could probably work something out, but I want to pair it up against that and do a more in-depth article, and also pair it up against the Canon 35mm lens as well, and shoot them both at f8, shoot them at similar apertures, because these only go up to f16 on the high side. But I want to see which one's sharper and see whether or not this is truly a value. They've put they call it luster gold ring around it. It does look silver, but it is lustrous gold on there.
Oh, the marketing people are back.
I know, they're back.
Did they do any deep trench isolation?
That wasn't present in the announcement, but it could be there in the verbiage somewhere. Yeah. and it's really hard to decide which lens is going to go for which audience, because if you look at the 35, it's a great focal length that's used often. Like, we had Nick Fancher on the Portrait Session podcast that aired today. And actually, it was really cool because he uses that in an 85mm as his prime lenses, no pun intended, but his primary lenses. And you could really actually see a lot of full frame users using that. I would also say that the 35 could be great for APS-C users because it brings them roughly to 50mm. But then back to the 45, it could go either way, because that brings our APS-C users out to 70mm, depending on their crop factor, or it brings 45 out to 70mm if it's used on the crop sensor. So 35 brings you out to 50, and then the 45 brings you out to 70, depending on your crop factor. So it's going to be pretty cool to see how these lenses are going to turn up. I know I'm buying the 35mm lens because the minimum object distance, which is how far away you can focus this lens, removes the need for me to need a macro lens for my use case, to where I'm photographing ring shots and things like that. I literally can put the rings at the end of the lens where a filter would screw on and focus perfectly and get detailed ring shots. So I think it's perfect. These lenses have blown me out of the water.
That's cool.
Very cool.
All right, I'm going to jump in really quick. I've got my 5-minute is only going to be a 5-second thing. So
do it.
Here's something that I just wanted to share this because I don't know if anyone else has had this problem before, and maybe they've fixed this, but I was on Facebook the other day and I went to check my messages, and in my messages, instead of clicking on inbox, I clicked on other, which I didn't even know existed. And when I did that, I saw that I have missed wedding opportunities and shoots from people that contacted me through Facebook that we were never friends, so we didn't have that connection. And so I was looking back, I'm like, when did this happen? When did this happen? So there were like two wedding opportunities that I totally lost because I've never clicked on the other part. I figured, well, the inbox would be messages in for me. Have any of you guys, do you guys check the other box?
Okay, let me tell you a little tip on this. Go to your settings, and there are two different kinds of filtering for your inbox. One is strict and one is loose. And so make sure yours is set to loose. That'll send you almost everything.
Yeah, okay. I've had similar situations too. I've missed a ton of messages just because they were going to my other box instead of my inbox. And like you, a lot of them were people, you know, asking about either weddings or portraits or something. So I totally had the same thing happen to me as well.
All right. All right. Well, that's good to know that's not just me. So
see, maybe I actually like the other box
because
because people are always trying to hunt me down. And I seriously wish I could talk with all the listeners of Improved Photography, but people are always trying to hunt me down. Usually it's around camera buying time, and it'll be like, I've listened to the show for 5 years. You owe it to me. I'm going to write you like this full page long description of what I've been thinking about cameras. What should I buy? I can't, you know, I mean, and so the other box is, it's great because then I can say, I honestly didn't see the message.
So that's why you messaged me back saying, hey, Brian, I honestly didn't see the message.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Now I know. All right. So here's what I want to do for the rest of my time. And I'm going to extend it. I'm going to go back to my 5 minutes. I want to use this 5 minutes to have a real estate photography battle between Nick and Jim.
Real estate?
Yes. Real estate photography.
All right. Let's do this.
So
wait, no.
This is the precursor to the Milky Way battle we're going to be having in,
there you go.
In November.
Yeah.
Available on pay-per-view.
I'm going to set my timer. You're only going to have 5 minutes.
All right.
At the end of the 5 minutes, you're done.
Let's do it.
Go for it. Here we go. Go.
All right, I just did this yesterday because I'm putting my house on the market, so I have a distinct advantage. My tip is wait for the equalization point. When you're taking the exterior photo of the home, you want to wait for when the blue hour, the sky becomes dark enough that it's the same exposure as the front of the house, and that's when you get that perfect rich blue sky and the lights on the exterior of the house for that money shot, the first one they're going to see on MLS.
Awesome. Boom. Okay. Mine would be to shoot from corners and to stay level. If you shoot from the corner, you're going to be able to see into other rooms. You're going to be looking through doorways and you're not going to be struggling so much with keeping your lines straight. So if you shoot from corners in your rooms, everything's going to look a lot bigger.
Mine is actually kind of similar to that, but when I was shooting my kitchen, one thing that I realized is that just about the perfect height for shooting bathrooms and kitchens is to putting that camera just slightly, very slightly above the height of the countertop. And that has two advantages. One, it makes the room look large. It also gets you at a different perspective than where you normally are at standing height. Most of us aren't as tall as the counter. We're a little bit higher than that. And the other thing it does is it allows you to keep the angle of the camera just about flat so that you don't get any weird distortion.
So most of the time, wide angle lenses are going to be your friend, but there's sometimes like bathrooms that it's just not wide enough. So panoramas become your friend. Flip your camera vertical and then shoot a panorama, and you'll be able to get a lot more in the field of view by effectively changing your camera into like an 8mm lens.
When you are taking real estate photos, the very first thing you should do is log on to your MLS. If you're in the United States, I don't know how other countries do this, what kind of process you have, and just see exactly what aspect ratio the photos should have. Because at least on my MLS, a vertical photo looks puny and the photos aren't very big at all. So you got to make sure all your photos are landscape, or if you're doing vertical, stack two of them together and Photoshop next to each other so it at least fills angles up the page. That's going to make a big difference in how you shoot everything, knowing how it's going to be displayed.
And keeping in mind that we want to shoot at the lowest possible ISO, so we have zero noise in these really dark rooms, you have to shoot on a tripod. So shooting on a tripod, shooting at ISO 100 with a fairly deep aperture like f11 to f16, that's going to provide much higher quality images.
I see your tip and raise you with a drone. My tip is, so we've all seen the photos of the exterior of real estate done with a drone that's up really high looking down on the house. Couple problems with that. One, it's usually going to be a commercial use, and the FAA has problems with that in the United States because they're old stiffs. A way to get around this is stand on top of your car and attach your camera to a monopod and just hold it up high. And guess what? You're about the height that the drone would be anyway. If you've used a drone to shoot real estate photography, you know that rarely do you really want to be super, super high in the sky anyway. Most of the time we're shooting about 20 feet up, which is, you know what, 6 meters up in the sky, just to get a high perspective, but not weird high perspective. And so stand on your car and raise up a monopod. You'll look like a crazy person. You might get struck by lightning, but you'll have a great shot.
Okay, mine is going to be to bracket your shots, but do not edit in Photomatics. Photomatics is going to make it look like a cartoon. You don't want that. You want to just use the HDR function in Lightroom, and you're going to end up with a much more natural result. That way you can bring down your highlights, boost your shadows, and it's not going to look like something from the circus.
Okay, I totally agree with you there. The house that we're looking at moving to in Meridian, Idaho, it was done all in HDR, and it just looks bad. It's bad. My next tip is to see how many photos your MLS will allow and how many photos should you include, just as many as keep making the house look better. You don't have to fill it up with 24 if it accepts 24. Just put as many photos as the areas of the house that are going to make it look enticing. We want to get people to get into the house, but still give them a fair view of what they're going to see when they get there.
And my next one is going to be sky replacement. I recently did a tutorial about this that'll be available soon, but sky replacement is your friend, because a lot of times you are forced to go out and do these shoots in the middle of the day when you have nothing for a sky. So
the hot potato
sky replacement. Do it. Sky replacement is your friend. The end.
Brian, tell me you don't wake up to that alarm.
That's actually a cowbell in my classroom.
Oh, okay. No,
that, and the other noise was from Darren, not me.
Yeah.
That was
very nice battle.
All right, some real estate photography. That's good. Maybe I need to go back and retake some of the photos with some of Nick's tips. Good stuff there. Well, before we go get on to the doodads of the week, I want to remind you about Photography Start. I spent a lot of time on this, making Photography Start. It is my new beginning photography class. It's available on improvephotography.com. It's 22 HD videos, and I walk you through everything you need to know to become a competent photographer. I mean, if you're struggling at all with shooting in manual mode confidently, this is the class for you. If you feel like your compositions are not what they could be, this is the class for you. If you're worried about your lighting, this is the class for you. If you are worried about getting crisp, sharp photos every time, this is the class for you. Anybody who is working on the fundamentals of photography still, you're going to love Photography Start. Go to improvephotography.com/start and use coupon code podcast for $40 off. That ends at the end of September, so be sure not to forget about it. Also, I want to tell you about the Lens Finder. It is up. Finally, I've been teasing about it for over a year on the podcast, and it is there. There's still a couple bugs I'm working out, but it's almost perfect now. If you're looking for a lens, this is so cool. It'll ask you 5 questions. Darren, we're going to do this live right here. Darren, you're looking for a lens right now. And so we're going to go through the Lens Finder. What camera system do you shoot? Canon, Canon crop, Nikon fold, Nikon crop, etc. What do you shoot?
Canon full.
Canon full frame. All right. Now, do you want to shoot portrait, landscape, wildlife, sports, night, street photography, kind of an all-purpose lens, or macro photography?
Let's go with portrait.
Portrait photography. Great. And then the next question it asks you are, what focal length are you interested in? A short lens for environmental portraits, something kind of middle of the road, or a long lens, or hey, I'm not really sure what to answer. Just show me your four favorite portrait lenses.
Show me your four favorite.
All right. Kabam. And I say, show me my lens, and bang, there are my recommendations for my four favorite portrait photography lenses on the Canon system. I'll explain the pros and cons of each, and also you have links to buy it on Amazon, rent it from Borrow Lenses, or read a review. If you use those links, we get about a 4% commission when you buy from Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and it really helps to support the site. So if you're buying a lens, it would mean a lot to us if you would use it. I've spent hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars making this tool. I think it's going to be awesome. It's been getting some great reviews. So check it out just at improvephotography.com, and then you'll see a link in the menu bar for the lens finder. If you're looking for a lens to rent, to try, to buy, go check it out, improvephotography.com/lens finder. That has been a huge project, so please take advantage of it. The more that I see people using it, the more I'll be able to spend the time to keep it up with the latest and greatest stuff. All right, let's get on and talk about the doodads of the week. Jeff, you're first.
Okay, real quick. I went out this last Labor Day and took the Manfrotto Off-Road 30L hiking camera bag out for a test. Went on a 4-mile hike in the canyons here in Utah. And so here's the very brief review. Look for the full review on improvephotography.com coming up in the next few weeks. But the pros, it was really comfortable, has lots of straps, can adjust to fit anyone. It's durable. It has a lot of room for like camping gear. So it would really be more ideal for your like going on an overnight backpacking trip and you want to put your clothes and your gear and maybe a tent or whatever in the main compartment. And then below it, there's a place for your photo gear. The cons, there's no spot for a water bladder, like a Camelback. And that's something I've wanted in all of these. None of them that I've tested so far have that. And that seems like a real big miss to me. I kind of get that they don't want water leaking onto the camera stuff, but boy, when you're hiking for a long distance and you're going to need water with you, that's the most convenient way to do it. I'm really sad that those aren't in there. It seems like it'd be so easy to add just a little elastic thing that you can attach those to and make it work. Anyway, the other con, it's really, really small in the place where there's camera gear that you can store. So for the mirrorless folks, that's probably fine. But I had a hard time getting two lenses in my camera into that patch.
Womp, 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 womp.
The final thing was the tripod storage, you know, mounting the tripod on the outside of the backpack so that you can carry it with you. It was just these elastic strap things, and I didn't like it as well as I liked it on the others that I've tested.
So it's a pretty awesome camera bag, except it doesn't have enough room for a camera.
It did okay.
That is a real limitation. Yeah. All right, Nick, what do you got for us?
This week, I'm testing out the Sigma 24-35 f/2. It's one of the Art Series lenses from Sigma, and I just got it yesterday. And like all the other Art lenses, the build quality is awesome. It's built like a tank. It's really sharp, and to have a zoom lens that is a f/2 and is compatible for full frame cameras is a first, really. So really excited to take this out and test it out, see how it does for night photography. And I'm going to take it to a wedding and try it out for some low light situations. So we're going to test it out, see how it goes. So stay tuned for that.
Very cool. Brian, I hate your doodad of the week because you stole mine.
Yeah, my doodad of the week is Periscope. If you don't know what Periscope is, it's kind of like Snapchat, but for video, to where you can record anything you want live, or it's not recording. Well, it does both, but you're showing live video of whatever you want it to be. And then as soon as you're done, it stays up for 24 hours so people can get on there and check. And if you've been listening to the Thoughts on Photography podcast, you know that I've been using it every day this month because I, as well as Jeff, have been reviewing messenger bags and backpacks. And I've been posting a picture on Instagram every day. And then at night, I've been using Periscope to kind of show some of the listeners just my gear in the bag and just a few of my thoughts. So Periscope is just a great way to just you know, share a little bit like your locations if you're out scouting, just to, if you're doing some fun things in your studio, or if you want to broadcast a photo shoot, depending on what shoot that is, or even like how-to tutorials, or, you know, showing off the gear or showing off what camera bags are reviewing. So Periscope, I've enjoyed using it. For the bags, what I'm doing at the end is I've got a few bags that I'm going to be giving away to listeners. And in order to kind of be in that pool for listeners, there are three things you have to do. One is to follow Brian McGuckin on Instagram, and also follow Jim Harmer on Instagram, and then follow me on Periscope. And that's just kind of fun because it allows you to get a closer look at the actual bag. And then what I'm going to do is I'll look, and the bags that I choose to give away, I'm going to look and see who clicked on like on Instagram. And if you clicked on like for that photo, then, or for that photo of the bag, then your name goes in a drawing and I'll pull one out and I'm going to send you that bag.
That's very cool. So you turned me on to Periscope, and like I hear Periscope and Snapchat and Meerkat, whatever, and I'm like, ah, whatever. It's what the cool kids are doing. I'm not into that. But you turned me on to Periscope, and I downloaded the app to check out some of your stuff, and it's pretty darn cool. So I'm starting to use it. And so, like, you know, I'm out taking pictures of my house, and I don't want to record a full YouTube tutorial that I've got to edit and stuff. Sometimes I'll just grab out my phone and just say, hey, I'm shooting this. I'll kind of walk you through the shot, show you the back of my camera and stuff. So Periscope is actually kind of neat. I hope it kind of catches on. It's from the people at Twitter. I hope it catches on and takes over, because it's pretty cool to be able to kind of watch other photographers and stuff using it. I'm also following Lindsay Adler, and she's been doing some things on there as well. So pretty cool. Darren, how about you?
Well, mine, you could probably guess, is the Tamron 35mm f1.8 lens, and it has reignited that curiosity that I had when I first picked up my DSLR camera. I've been wandering around shooting pictures of anything and everything. Like, I think I've photographed more pictures of different types of leaves this week than I ever have in my whole career doing photography. And if you just want a really sharp lens that has amazing shallow depth of field and a beautiful bokeh, I can't really talk about this lens enough. It is just stunning.
Very cool. Well, that does it for us this week on the Improved Photography Podcast. Be sure to check out our other shows. We have a new show hitting you almost every day of the week. Thoughts on Photography, Photo Taco, and Portrait Session as well. Search them on your favorite podcatcher and subscribe, and you will get all kinds of photo excitement. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you in another 7 days.